a meteorite embedded deep within the Milne ice shelf contains fossilized evidence of extraterrestrial life. At least that's what NASA claims. The timing couldn't be more perfect for President Zachary Herney, whose re-election campaign is floundering against Senator Sedgwick Sexton's relentless attacks on NASA's budget waste. When intelligence analyst Rachel Sexton, the senator's estranged daughter, is summoned by the president to authenticate this discovery, she finds herself whisked to the Arctic alongside famous oceanographer Michael Toland and astrophysicist Corky Marlinson. The evidence seems overwhelming. The 8-ton meteorite contains numerous fossils of bug-like creatures visible to the naked eye. Carbon dating, chemical analysis, extraction location, everything points to an authentic meteorite that fell to Earth centuries ago. This changes everything we know about life in the universe, Toland explains, his eyes reflecting wonder and awe. Yet strange inconsistencies begin to surface. Why is there bioluminescent plankton in the extraction pit's water? How could ocean organisms reach a glacial ice shelf supposedly isolated from the sea? When glaciologist Nora Mangor discovers salt in the extraction shaft, impossible for a landlocked glacier, the team conducts ground-penetrating radar tests that reveal something horrifying: a perfectly cylindrical tunnel extending from the meteorite shaft down to the ocean below. Someone planted the meteorite from underneath. NASA faked the whole thing, Corky whispers, his scientific certainty crumbling. Before they can process this revelation, shots ring out. Two black-clad figures emerge, executing Nora with military precision. Rachel, Toland, and Corky flee across the ice sheet, pursued by killers whose equipment suggest government operatives. In desperation, Toland releases a weather balloon that drags them toward the glacier's edge. Their pursuers corner them on an outcropping over the Arctic Ocean and toss a concussion grenade that separates the ice shelf. Rachel and her companions plummet into the frigid waters below. Their NASA survival suits prevent immediate hypothermia, but they have only minutes before the cold claims them. Miles from shore, in water too cold for survival, with killers who believe them dead, they have no way to share their discovery. Despite her terror, Rachel maintains her analytical mind, pounding an SOS in Morse code with her ice axe, hoping intelligence satellites might detect the pattern. While Rachel fights for survival, Washington anticipates the president's announcement. Senator Sexton's campaign attacks NASA's budget, declaring on CNN, "When schools can't afford textbooks, we're spending $15 billion a year taking pictures of space dust." Behind closed doors, Sexton meets private aerospace executives who offer campaign contributions in exchange for his promise to privatize NASA. "With your help, soon I'll be in a position to make sure all of you can launch your dreams." Meanwhile, Gabrielle Ash, Sexton's assistant, questions her loyalty after discovering evidence of his corruption. She learns NASA's satellite director was forced to lie about fixing critical software, the same software that supposedly found the meteorite. The stakes are clear. President Herney used NASA's discovery to undermine Sexton's campaign while securing the agency's future funding. But did the president know the meteorite was fake? Or is he an unwitting participant in someone else's deception? The USS Charlotte, a nuclear submarine, surfaces to rescue the freezing survivors after detecting Rachel's SOS. When Rachel attempts to contact William Pickering, presidential adviser Marjorie Tench answers instead, dismissing her claims and revealing the president has already begun his meteorite announcement. Toland suggests they verify their suspicions by having the submarine transport them to his research vessel, the Goya, where ship geologist Xavier can analyze their sample. Floating above a volatile underwater volcano called a megaplume, Xavier confirms their fears. The rock's chemical composition, particularly its titanium and zirconium ratios, proves it formed on Earth's ocean floor, not in space. Their triumph is short-lived. The Delta Force team tracks them to the ship and attacks, killing Xavier. In the chaos, Rachel becomes trapped in Tolan's submersible as it sinks into the darkness, a nightmare scenario for someone with hydrophobia. William Pickering, Rachel's mentor, father figure, and director of the National Reconnaissance Office, is revealed as the conspiracy's mastermind. "I did what I had to do for my country," he explains. Pickering feared Senator Sexton would privatize space, threatening national security. "Space is the military high ground. We cannot let it become a corporate free-for-all." The revelation devastates Rachel. Her trusted mentor had orchestrated a fraud causing scientists' deaths. Neither NASA nor President Herney knew about the deception. They truly believed the meteorite was authentic. "Sometimes the only way to save what you love is to make the right sacrifice," Pickering tells her, referencing his daughter Diana, killed during a classified military operation, an event that shaped his belief in necessary sacrifice for national gain. As Pickering moves to eliminate the final witnesses, an underwater volcano erupts, creating a massive vortex. Rachel and Tolland escape by helicopter, while Pickering remains on the doomed vessel as it's dragged into the abyss. Senator Sexton orchestrates what he believes will be his defining political moment. At the Washington Monument, he announces, "I have just received information confirming that the NASA meteorite is a fraud, a desperate deception aimed at saving a failing space agency and floundering president." What Sexton doesn't realize is that Gabrielle has switched his evidence with explicit photographs documenting their affair. His triumph instantly becomes political self-destruction on live television. Meanwhile, President Herney faces a moral dilemma. The meteorite is genuine, but NASA's discovery narrative is fabricated. The pod satellite never functioned. NASA had intercepted intelligence about a Canadian geologist's discovery and constructed an elaborate fiction. In a pivotal Oval Office conversation, Herney demonstrates true leadership. "There's just no substitute for the truth," he says, rejecting advisors' urgings to maintain the deception. He calls a press conference and acknowledges NASA's wrongdoing completely. The contrast becomes clear. Sexton plots political advantage while his daughter faces mortal danger, while Herney's honest acknowledgement transforms a potential career-ending crisis into a demonstration of authentic leadership. As the dust settles, Rachel and Tolland recover in the White House. The meteorite, revealed as a terrestrial rock with deep-sea fossils, is quietly dropped into the Atlantic Ocean, returning to the depths from which it came, symbolizing how elaborate deceptions ultimately return to their origins. In the Lincoln bedroom, Tolland awaits Rachel with Chinese kissing fish in a crystal bowl and white lilies. The fish, known for lifelong partnerships, symbolize their bond. "I don't know what the future holds," Tolland tells her, "but I know I want to face it with you." Their relationship represents authenticity triumphing over artifice. In a world where truth is manipulated for political advantage and scientific discoveries become pawns and power games, authentic human connection remains our most reliable compass. Rachel and Tolland have seen through multiple layers of deception, from the meteorite fraud to the false personas surrounding them. Their recognition of genuine truth in each other offers a path forward. Like Rachel, we must combine expertise with intuition, question convenient narratives, and remember that convincing deceptions eventually crumble before persistent inquiry. Truth remains discoverable through scientific rigor, emotional intelligence, and moral courage, qualities vital in our era of sophisticated misinformation.